Hello, Craig. This is Tony Robbins.
Tony, hi.
How are you?
Very well, thanks. So thanks for taking the time to speak with me.
My pleasure.
Really appreciate it. Okay, so yeah, so you obviously know we're a spiritual magazine. Each issue we try to explore the nature of enlightenment from a different angle.
Sure.
And in this issue, we're looking into the relationship between enlightenment and self-mastery, which is why we wanted to speak with you, because we felt if anybody knows about self-mastery, we thought it would have to be Tony Robbins. So
a compliment.
Definitely. So, okay, so to start out, for our readers, I thought it would be helpful if you could speak about how you would define self-mastery.
Well, I think mastery of self really comes down to the capacity of an individual to discover what it is that they truly want, what is their path, and then to eliminate the obstacles that are always internal that would keep you from being able to fulfill that path on an ongoing basis. I think there are natural obstacles that life offers us in order for us to grow and expand as individuals and discover more of who we are and to unfold more of our spiritual path. But I think there are a great number of challenges that we are self-induced, or, you know, are self-induced, I should say. And the capacity to meet those, anticipate those as much as possible, eliminate those by developing what I would consider to be emotional and or spiritual muscles. Because the challenges will continue to show up in life, but if you have the inner strength, whether that be your faith, your determination, your incredible love, both for self, for God, for others, if you can develop those virtuous emotional states that guide human emotion and, most importantly, guide human behavior, then I think you have the capacity to live a life that's extremely fulfilled. And I think that's ultimately what self-mastery leads to, is a life that's fulfilled. That can only, in my mind, come from not only feeling good, but in contributing in meaningful ways to those around you, those you care about, and hopefully to society as a whole.
Great, okay. So like I said before, in this issue of the magazine, we're looking into the relationship between self-mastery and spiritual enlightenment. And just to let you know, what I'm referring to when I use the word enlightenment is the ultimate goal of the spiritual search. In
right.
the various religious traditions, it's been referred to as nirvana, liberation, or union with God.
Right.
And so I just wanted to ask you up front, what do you see as the similarities and the differences between self-mastery and enlightenment?
Well, I think the goal is the same. I think the language is different and the traditions are different. You know, I found it fascinating to read your magazine because I saw, you know, it was great to see such a variety in terms of the points of view about how to approach this experience of ultimate ecstasy, as some people describe it, or ultimate nirvana, or ultimate fulfillment. You know, it depends on your model of the world, the Eastern or Western, as you describe it. But I think personally the difference is when you're looking for personal fulfillment, hopefully there are less conflicts in the definition. You know, if you read Ken Wilber's article, for example, I found him to be brilliant and poetic, but I also found it to be very, from my perspective, fascinating that he has a belief structure that he feels very passionate about, that there's authentic spirituality, and then there's, you know, all the others, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I think that kind of exclusive thought process doesn't really need to be a part of a practical approach to living a life that has extraordinary quality. And that extraordinary quality can be measured in so many areas. And I think that quality for me is not picking one area and saying that's everything. I think spirituality is a part of everything. It doesn't need to be excluded. It doesn't need to be separated, nor does it need to be measured, in my mind, by a series of steps or traditions. I think every individual has to discover for themselves what that looks like. So I personally am, again, saying this is the way. I don't tell people this is the way. I tell people there are certain needs that human beings clearly have. I mean, you don't have to be too bright to be able to see there are patterns in human behavior if you've been around, as I have, 2 million people in the last, you know, basically 21 years of my life.
Sure.
I've seen everything from, you know, the people who are supposedly the most successful in the world by cultural terms, as
right.
well as those who've been the most successful in the world in spiritual terms, whether it's a Mother Teresa or a Christopher Reeve, who I perceive to be an extraordinary human being, or a Nelson Mandela, or whether it be a top athlete or a top financial trader who made $500 million in a day. Each of these people have found aspects of fulfillment. Some of them have really found ultimate fulfillment, what you would call nirvana in my mind, in that they have an incredibly fulfilled experience of life, themselves, and God all at one time. And how that is done, I think, is unique and different as people, and I think it's wonderful that there are so many different traditions that offer ways and paths to do it, and I just try to offer people some ways that I think are very simple and practical and measurable and don't require you to give up your spiritual path, but maybe allow you to pursue it simultaneously.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Okay, so, yeah, well, there's some specifics I wanted to get into
Great.
Around this distinction, just to see if we can make some distinctions.
Sure.
The attainment of self-mastery, as it's generally conceived, seems to include the winning of an extraordinary self-confidence anchored in the discovery that one has the power to break through seeming limitations and do things they never imagined they could, like the discovery of an overwhelming sense of I can. And those individuals who've attained enlightenment also seem to demonstrate an unusual confidence. I think this is some of what you're saying, is there's, you know, different ways one can reach certain, you know, extraordinary qualities.
Right.
So they'll demonstrate an unusual confidence and a sense of being unbound by limitation. Yet by their own descriptions, this confidence, sense of being unbound by limitation, arises from the deep, mysterious, and life-changing realization of their essential unity with the very source of all existence. And I'm wondering what, in your view, are the similarities and differences between, say, the discovery of one's personal power on one hand and this mystical or, you know, enlightened realization of a fundamental unity on the other?
Well, I want to answer your question for you, but I think we're operating on a slightly different paradigm. Self-mastery,
okay,
believe it or not, is not the ultimate perspective that I have for a person. First of all, I don't believe that's something that's, quote, attainable. I don't look at it as a goal.
So it's more of a process.
I look at it as an ongoing process. To me, it's more like active mastery. It's an ongoing process every day that you're alive. It's not, you know, the boring, overused example is the old quote of the road to success is always under construction. So I don't think it's something you attain. I don't believe in that. Nor do I believe that many people who supposedly are enlightened maintain that sense of enlightenment forever. I've seen many spiritual masters that I visited in India who, you know, my experience with them did not confirm for me, at least, that they were living the person that they were and that we all are. I also think there's a difference between I can and I am. And I think I am is really the goal that I'm looking for rather than I can. Everyone can. I think the experience of liberation that I think is the language that you're using,
yeah,
this, is coming from being in a position where you give up an obsession with what it is that you think is controlling you. I mean, in so many spiritual traditions, there's this focus about all the hell you have to go through, basically, in order for you to finally be liberated and finally be free. And my personal,
right,
belief is the only thing keeping you from freedom is all the beliefs you have about what has to happen before you can be there. I think that what it is it's, we don't value things, though, unless we make it very difficult because they're not as significant, and we don't allow ourselves to have that ultimate aha, that ultimate sense of connection. I think we live in a society where there's an obsession with, you know, who I am as who I was or what happened to me years ago, and it's completely absurd. It's cultural hypnosis, and it happens around the world, but especially in this culture, the Western culture, where the basis of that, the presupposition of that, is that we're all fragile and that what we have to be able to do is somehow work out what's happened in order for us to experience, you know, the gifts that God has given us right here and now. And so whatever you focus on, you get more of. If I say to you, you know, don't think of the color blue, don't think of the color blue, don't think of the color blue 50,000 times, I guarantee, if I say, what color are you thinking of, it's going to be blue. And so what most of us do is we actually reinforce the neurology, the psychology, and the spiritual focus of limitation as opposed to one of transformation and freedom that already is within you and around you and experiencing you. And I think every great master says that. They all say it different ways. But then the people that teach you how to get it, quote unquote, is they're trying to teach you how to get something or what you can get. I think my metaphor really is quite different. Mine is there is freedom when you let go of fear and you embrace love fully. The love for yourself, the love for God, the love for life, the love for people. What keeps people from doing that, I think, is just their fear.
Okay, so I had brought up earlier your neuroassociative conditioning, which you're,
yeah,
saying that now it's not necessarily the core of what you're doing.
It's a set of tools to deal with the blocks that show up when you start realizing that you're creating these blocks to just being who you really are.
Right. Okay, so what I wanted to do is just bring out a contrast point here, because you're saying that this is, it's a powerful technique for reconditioning ourselves.
Right.
And it leads to a greater level of freedom. Now, in contrast to the path of enlightenment, which is traditionally seen as a form of deconditioning or going beyond all conditioning.
Right.
In fact, it's traditionally taught in the Enlightenment traditions that until we've transcended conditioning altogether, we'll never be truly free.
Let me ask you a question before you finish. And what is the path that most of them use? A conditioning path. Say this mantra over and over again, right? Breathe in this particular pattern. Sit in this particular pose. What is that? It's pure conditioning.
To go beyond conditioning. And so I just want to ask you, in your view, do you believe there is a dimension of freedom that lies beyond the freedom that we can experience by reconditioning ourselves?
Well, absolutely. I think ultimate transformation is the connection with one's creator. And that is not a conditioning process, that's a connection process. But often to get ourselves to the place where we allow ourselves to feel that connection, we have to break through the barriers that we have conditioned within ourselves because we don't feel we're worthy. And that's the deepest fear of most people. They don't think they're worth it. They don't think they're in that level. Or we don't believe that we'll really have lasting love. And so in order to get through those things, very often there are a variety of practices that can assist you. But if you've been doing something forever and you're still not feeling it, that might be a clue to change your approach. I personally think that conditioning is one of the tools for doing it. Ultimate transformation is when somebody creates that connection. And what I try to do is create environments where that connection is easily attainable, and those environments have to do with environments where there is so much love and so much possibility and where people feel so connected to themselves and so connected to others. I mean, like my Master University, we have people from 70 countries. That, you know, I just finished my last week of it last week, 2 weeks ago. You know, 70 countries, you got 6 languages translated simultaneously, and we're going from 8:30 in the morning to 1 or 2 in the morning, full blast. You have unbelievable expectations in people's minds. They're here to transform their body, their mind, their emotions, their spirit, their soul, everything simultaneously. And there is a rigorous approach to how to do that. But the primary thing that makes those transformations possible is you put people back in their reality of themselves. You put them in an environment where the best of them shows up, and they begin to remember the truth. I mean, Socrates said, learning is remembering. And that's all it is. And so some of this conditioning is trying to de-hypnotize people. I would agree with that. From the hypnosis that the culture has created, and I certainly agree with that, but trying to use words like de-hypnotize for the general population would then put me into the age of enlightenment, which most people don't relate to. I'm more here to meet with a practical guy who hasn't quite gotten to the idea that he needs to be enlightened. I'm looking for the guy that says, you know, I want to be fulfilled, which to me means to be constantly improving the sense of enlightenment I have, to constantly increase my connection spiritually, to be physically as strong and healthy as I can possibly be. I'm not here to wilt off in the corner and have a big fat belly here and be unhealthy and sick and cough all the time and say, yes, I'm being very spiritually enlightened. I'm not here either to ignore my family and not take care of the people around me because I'm so off on my own individual path. That's another part of my life I really want to have a sense of mastery of. I'm also here to contribute in some way in terms of adding value to the world while I'm here on the planet in lots of ways, emotional ways, spiritual ways, physical ways, financial ways, work ways, creativity ways, and see if I can't add quality of life that gives people even more choice and more opportunity to think and be and share more of who they are.
Okay, great. So, like teachings of self-mastery, most traditional enlightenment teachings tend to place a strong emphasis on the need for enormous effort and self-discipline or self-control. But in the enlightenment teachings, that effort and self-discipline are intended to ultimately help to facilitate a profound surrender or complete giving up of control in order to allow a force greater than oneself to move one's life. And I just wanted to ask you, does the path of mastery, you were calling it life mastery a few minutes ago, that you teach, does that ultimately bring one to the same point of surrender that the great traditions speak about?
Yes, I believe it. I believe that, but I also believe in the paradox. I believe that ultimately everything that's in my life, I really believe is guided, but I also believe that along the way I have conscious choice to listen to that inner guidance or not. Mm-hmm. And if I listen to it, then my life turns out very differently than if I don't. And knowing when it's really your inner guidance and when it's your fear speaking, which I think what most spiritual traditions would call ego, I would call fear. You know, I would say what most traditions, you know, destroying the ego, I would say is, you know, breaking through the fear. That would be a way that I would try to translate that. In which case,
that makes sense.
You know, because the fear is what keeps us separate from our ultimate selves, and the fear is what keeps us separate from the love that we really want that's already inside of us. And if we are connected with it, it's easy to share with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yes, I ultimately believe that you're no longer trying to control everything; that you have ultimate faith. And when I believe I'm being my spiritual best, I don't know what's happening. It's just coming through me. I put myself in a place. I ask for guidance. I pray, and then I trust that it's there, and it shows up. So the answer to that is yes, but I also believe in the old story of, you know, the minister that crosses the country and he's out there, you know, letting everybody know about the gospel and being really clear that they understand that Christ is the source of their life, and he gets to the desert outside of Phoenix, Arizona, and you probably remember the story, and he gets really close to this area that must be a mirage, because in the middle of the desert he sees these amazing gardens. He sees vines and trees and fruit and everything. As he gets closer, it's real, in the middle of the desert. Everything around it is dirt and dry and dead, and he sees a little house back at the back of the garden, and so he walks to the house and he bangs on the door because he wants to make sure the gardener understands the source of all this, and he bangs on the door very intensely. And the gardener is a very kind, loving, and spiritual man, comes to the door and opens the door, and and sees the minister, and the minister says, "Mr. Gardener, you know, you and the good Lord have certainly done a fine job with this garden." But he expressed very intense, "The good Lord has done a fine job with this garden."
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the man, the little gardener, looks out at him and smiles. He's a very loving man. And he says, "Mr. Minister, I understand what you're saying." He said, "I understand your point. I think what you're trying to say to me is, you know what, if it wasn't for the gift of the seed and the miracle of the soil and the sunshine and the air," he said, "there'd be no garden here." He said, "you know what, you're absolutely right." He said, "but I have to tell you something. You should have seen this place when God had it all by himself." You know? And I think that's my view of spirituality. I believe that, yes, I have to trust in the faith, but I believe in, you know, trusting God and tie up your camels. You know, the guy that wanders out in the desert with, you know, with his camel just lets him loose and says, "well, God will protect me," isn't doing his part. I don't think that's how God has it. I think we're in cahoots with God to make this thing work down here. And I think to the extent that we do our part and we listen to that inner guidance that really is always available to all of us, to the extent that we have a life that is fulfilled and maybe one that's enlightened.
So we have to participate in that.
I do believe that.
Yeah.
But we have to listen.
Anyway. Okay. You speak about the possibility of discovering and awakening an awesome power that lies dormant within each of us. In your view, is this power the same as the higher power referred to in the religious or spiritual tradition?
Yes, without a doubt. But again, I don't, in my teachings, I'm not teaching religion and I'm not promising spiritual enlightenment. I'm looking for people that really want to take wherever the life is and transform the quality of that life. And by not having those terms, I'm able to reach people that are currently not your choir. And as a result, my goal, and you know, very often people say I've had the most profound spiritual transformation of my life here because I didn't put a label on it. I didn't tell them they had to be a certain way. They had to practice a certain thing. I let them connect. I created an environment where they were more likely to connect with their deeper self. And that deeper self, I believe, is a spiritual self that's connected to everything. But again, I never tell people that. I don't lecture on it. But do I believe that it's the same source? There's no question. There's only one power in the world, and it's that power comes from your creator, in my belief.
Okay, right.
So when someone is demonstrating something extraordinary, while they may have great pride in the use of the power that God has given them by making some intelligent choices, hopefully, I think all along the way, there's no question in my mind that any great thing in my life is a gift from God, and I've always believed that. I believe the ultimate path to enlightenment in my mind is the cultivation of gratitude. Because in a state of gratitude, real gratitude, deep spiritual, emotional, physical, but definitely soul-level appreciation, there is no fear. When you're grateful, fear disappears. When you're grateful, you know, lack disappears. When you're grateful, significance disappears. You feel a sense of your life is uniquely blessed, and that's a sense of significance, but at the same time, you feel like you're a part of everything that exists. And you know that you are not the source of it. And in that place, there's connection, there's significance, there's certainty, there's a massive sense of variety for your life, there's growth, and usually in that state, there's a contribution not only to yourselves, but in that state, you show up differently for the people around you. Just walking around, you vibrate. So if there are many emotions, obviously faith, obviously one's passion, there's so many emotions that are so valuable for the development of one's spiritual, physical, emotional self in the path of quality of life, in the path of self-mastery. But I think one of the most underutilized by most is gratitude. And those that are pursuing enlightenment with such a fervor and trying to do all these physical practices but are not living in a state of gratitude, I think they will never find what they're pursuing, because it is only through that gratitude, that acknowledgement of the ultimate blessing and connection, that one experiences the ultimate blessing and connection.
That's really nice. Wow. Okay, I just have two more questions.
Okay.
Some prominent exponents of the human potential movement, for instance, Michael Murphy, the founder of Esalen,
yes,
believe that contemporary advances in our understanding of the workings of the human mind and body and of how mastery is achieved should be seen in the context of the evolution of the whole human race. They believe that the pioneering efforts of people like you reflect the possibility of a transformation over time of our entire species. I was wondering, do you see your own work in such an evolutionary context?
Well, I mean, I really appreciate the compliment you kind of threw me there. I don't know if I'm playing the game at that level of transformation for the Earth and for our species. I'm just a guy that really loves people and is trying to follow his heart and soul with as much passion as possible and learn and grow and contribute and remind people that he doesn't know all the answers, but he got a few that seem to have some practical application to a quality of life. If you look at us as a species, though, I think that we're an experiment. I think it's hubris to think that we are the end-all and be-all that exists in the universe. And, I mean, you think about how long the dinosaurs were here for, what, 200,000 years, or 100 million years, rather, and we've been around here for 200,000 years. I mean, you know, when we've managed to put ourselves at the brink of destroying ourselves many times, and we probably have many more still ahead of us.
Sure.
You know, I just think that, I think our competitive advantage, if there's a, if God has given us a tool, an evolutionary advantage, it's consciousness. It's that ability to have something more than our physical bodies and our five senses, and our ability to unify that consciousness. I think it's that sense of love and connection that allow us as human beings to reach inside and find a part of ourselves that doesn't show up on in normal daily life for most people, and really contribute, you know, something that is special and unique that, you know, that your Creator has given you, and that all of us will benefit from when you show up at the level called outstanding. Because that's where all those benefits come. You know, I told you excellence, but the ultimate level is outstanding. And the neat thing about that is it's a quarter inch above excellence. But very few people ever go there. When you're outstanding, when you stand out from all the rest in terms of your standards for yourself, not competing with others, but your standards for yourself, you get all the rewards, all the love, all the impact, all the everything, not just from society, but from yourself, because you know you've never settled for less than you can be. So I think to answer your question directly, I think anything we can do to more thoroughly understand how we function as human beings and what really drives us and what it is that human beings are pursuing and what, you know, how we can utilize understanding to be better human beings and better spiritual beings, I think that that is totally a part of our evolution, and I think it has to happen rapidly because our technology is multiplying in its capacity and its strength and its diversity more rapidly than our technology for the management of human emotion, which is what drives all human action. And I think that's the part that has to be focused on. We need to develop more ability to develop the emotional and spiritual muscles to deal with whatever challenges show up. Because if there's a prayer I have, it's not give me, Lord. You know, it's not why me. It's for me, you know, there's a frame for me. It's make me, you know, it's make me more. It's like I don't want it to necessarily be easier. Maybe intellectually I'd like that, but what I really want to be is to be better. Because if each one of us is constantly more and better of what is really inside of us, then our capacity as a species and as a spirit and as a unified spiritual body to do good, be good, create good, and experience more of our true selves, our authentic selves, to use the word that's so often used in these traditions, I think is multiplied many times over.
What do you personally see as the highest expression of human potential?
Love. There is nothing greater than pure love. I mean, when someone is acting from that state and not from fear, and they're coming from that place of loving themselves and loving their Creator and loving their fellow man, I think the best and highest of people comes out. And I think that's an overly simplistic answer, but I think it's an accurate one. And I think we try to make things more complex than they really are because it makes us feel more significant.
Sure. Is there anything further that you're still striving to achieve in your own life?
Yeah, I'm striving to love more, to constantly expand myself spiritually, emotionally. I mean, as I said, I don't think it's something that you attain. I think whatever you think you've attained it, you know, you're kidding yourself because there's always another level. I mean, there's no limit to what the human soul can become and can learn and can grow and can share and can contribute. And so, you know, I'm just here basically on earth, as far as I'm concerned, to love and to laugh and to learn and to really grow and to, you know, give and to appreciate and to demonstrate. You know, and the love part to me comes the minute you just operate from your true self and you let go of fear. And the laughing happens when you stop making things, everything's so damn serious, and you stop and realize that, you know, while it's wonderful to be pursuing things, it's really wonderful also to realize just the humor in all this, that God has a great sense of humor. Look at what you and I are talking about. Look at the people in your magazine, all these different views, and they're so intense about it, some of them. And others, you know, got a better sense of humor about it. I think you got to laugh. You got to enjoy what the gifts that have been given to you, because if you're laughing, you're closer to appreciation. I think learning is what we are made to. It's happening every moment. The question, are you learning consciously or unconsciously? Are you learning through the hypnosis of the culture, or are you consciously designing what the standards are for what you want to learn in your life, and you're putting a focus into the areas, because there's so much to learn in this lifetime. There's so much that's vying for your attention. You can learn how to use, you know, some drug to get yourself instantly out of pain, or you can learn more about the meaning of your life or the meaning of what you're here to contribute. It depends on where you put your focus. And I think the concept of growing is, that is life. You're either growing or dying, and there's no in between, and the only way that happens is by standards. It's by challenge. The body gets stronger with challenge. You know, we are not fragile, as traditional Western psychology would try to teach us. It's not that you're so damn weak. You know, you need to be challenged. The bones of the body, it's been proven, you know, the people who got the strongest bones, as they get older, the people that make the largest demands. They got people now in their 60s and 70s, they're training with weights, and they're becoming physically as strong as men and women in their 20s and 30s, and the recent research they've been doing. So, whereas in the past, everybody's trying to protect everything. And I think a moment of a child's life when their destiny, a portion of their destiny is defined, is they fall down, they scrape their knees, and what happens at that point? Some cotton-picking adult runs over and grabs them and hugs them and all that stuff. I mean, that's what we all want to do, because we don't want anybody we love to be in pain. But when we do that, we cripple them versus having that child learn to get up. I mean, falling down and getting up is one of the greatest experiences in life. It's called growth. It's called reminding yourself you're not fragile. Someone who never, ever experiences pain, never, ever experiences tragedy, never, ever experiences those challenges will fear it more. The fear is always greater than the real experience. So I think challenge, both difficult and fun challenges, are great, and that comes down to standards. That's saying, I'm going to have a life that is outstanding, not by comparison to others, because who the hell am I to compare to others? I can't compare that. But by compared to what my potential is, that I've got to constantly going for that. If I compare with other people, I'm going to fall into the significance camp. The significance camp I want to be in is, I want a significant life because I know I've never settled for less than I can be. The whole concept of giving is just doing what's really natural when you're in love and not in fear. You know, it's just, it's giving of yourself, most of all. You know, it's giving of your love. It's giving of your spirit. You know, it's giving of your thoughts. And it's giving without fear of being judged. You know, and knowing you don't have all the answers. And to me, and I've said to you a half dozen times probably here, and I mean it, and I hope you publish it. I don't know what the hell the answer is. I don't pretend to. I'm only here to give, I'm food for, you know, people's ridicule or people's thought or people's questioning. I don't know. It depends on what they want to do. It depends on their model of the world, their perception of life. You know, I'm not the traditional person you can probably find in your magazine usually.
No.
And that's probably why you called me, too.
That is.
Right?
Yeah,
you want to
absolutely.
Hear more of the same. So hopefully it'll stimulate people to ask some other questions and say, he's full of garbage and it's terrible. And, or, right. You know, yeah, there might be a pearl of usefulness in what he said there. This part's garbage and that's there. And what I tell people is, don't follow anybody. People go to my seminars and if you came to a guru, you came to the wrong place. That's not me. You know, if you came for a friend and a coach who's got some practical tools that seem to be pretty useful in these areas, great. But listen to me, and what makes sense, use. What doesn't make sense, take notes on. And take,
you know,
notes
you know.
On and take it back, because later on it may make sense to you. And if you don't use it, I'm fine. Take what makes sense and throw out the rest. But that, to me, is the mindset of giving. And the last two things I'll say to you is, you know, for me, demonstrate means walk your talk. And no one is perfect, and I don't expect anybody is. But you know, I think all the great spiritual masters and the people I read about in your magazine, most people that I'm aware of anyway there, it's obvious they really walk their talk, and they're trying to challenge other people to do that more often. And I'm sure there are exceptions, because we compartmentalize as human beings.
Sure.
That's part of our nature in order to try and meet our needs. But the more you can demonstrate what you're talking about, the more you will have the ability to impact other people. Because if I'm up there and I weigh 70 pounds overweight or 10 pounds overweight, and I'm trying to tell you how you can make your body better, you're not going to listen to me. If I'm up there and I'm depressed all the time, you're not going to listen. And I have no right to try and share with you. But if I'm a fairly fulfilled guy, and I seem to be pretty damn happy, and I've got four really great kids that seem to be pretty darn fulfilled and pleased, and I'm not professing to be perfect, and I seem to be doing really well in all these different areas, and you can't judge my spirituality, but the ones you can measure, my body, my results, my business, my economics, the way I treat people, those things seem to be pretty good and you like them, then, you know, maybe there's a part of what I'm sharing that makes sense. And the last part is appreciate. Now that I've already talked about it. Gratitude is it, baby. If you don't have gratitude, you don't have anything. If you've got gratitude, you got everything. I remember I asked Sir John Templeton, you know, I do a lot of financial work.
Uh-huh.
And you know, he's a multi-billionaire and one of the more spiritual people you ever meet. Fantastic man. And donates a lot of his money. But more importantly, he's dedicated his life, really, to his 80s now, to, you know, helping people to understand spiritual practices. Not necessarily religion, but spiritual practices. How to become closer to God and closer to who you really are inside. And I was asking him, you know, originally, I said, you know, what does it take to be wealthy? Because we're talking about finances, you know. He said, you know, it's what you teach. And I said, yeah, but what part of what I teach? He's a lot of things. He says, gratitude. He said, he's the one who told me. He said, you know, gratitude. When you have gratitude, there is no fear. And when you have gratitude, you're connected. He said, how many people have you dealt with, Tony? You knew one of the guys I work with, right? Guy made $500 million in a day. And there's only a few people on earth that have ever done it. One guy made $1 billion a day, but the guy I work with made $500 million in a day. And I coached him for the last 4 or 5 years because after doing that, he lost money for 3 years.
Uh-huh.
He sabotaged himself, you know? And he's saying, how many people you know that have got billions of dollars and are freaked out inside? And one of the people that you know that you've worked with, Tony, that have, quote, nothing, but are really fulfilled. And he said, and the truth is, there are people with a lot of money and they also are totally fulfilled. It's not like this spiritual tradition says you got to have nothing. It's not about money. It's about a reflection of your level of gratitude. And the more grateful you are, the more you will feel, the more you feel, the more you attract of the good to your life. That's what I'm here to try and do.
Thank you very much.
I hope there was usefulness in my babblings.
No, fantastic. Really fantastic.
Good.
Yeah, no, it was... pleasure. Real pleasure.